Creole languages are languages so low in the pecking order that many people don't even consider them to be languages. Creoles are spoken by descendants of slaves and indentured laborers in plantation colonies all over the world. Derek Bickerton has spent more than 30 years researching Creole languages on four continents. Bickerton writes about his Creole research in a book called Bastard Tongues. A trailblazing linguist finds clues to our common humanity in the world's lowliest languages. Derek Bickerton gives us a little taste of the Creole languages.
Well, you can get some of my favorite sentences, such as, she must see day bad, make she takey. And what it means is, she must have been hard up if she married him.
When I first heard it, I had no clue what it was that you were saying. Did you get it?
Oh, the first time you don't get these things. I mean, when I went to, it took me about a year before I could really understand everything that people were saying.
You've studied Creole languages now for what, 30 years or so?
Uh-huh.
And you've talked to thousands of people over that time. Mm-hmm. How did you decide to pursue the research?
Well, I don't know, because I never been trained as a researcher, and it just seemed to me that if you wanted to find out what people said, you had to talk to them. But again, there was the problem that if you're an educated speaker of a standard language like English, then there are all kinds of social and emotional problems tied up with this thing. The very ambivalent attitudes of Creole speakers towards standard language speakers, which is expressed, I think, best in the Haitian, where parler français, to speak French, means to lie, and parler Creole means to speak the truth.
Uh-huh.
Creole is kind of down-to-earth and vivid and homely, and it's our thing, but at the same time, people who speak it know that for this they are kind of looked down on by speakers of standard English who regard them all too often wrongly as, uneducated, unintelligent, and so on. All these kind of nasty stereotypes about Creole speakers that Creole speakers, of course, are only too well aware of. So this is a pitfall. So in other words, they kind of tend to be a bit edgy when they're talking. It takes quite a while to kind of talk away your status when you're dealing with them. But I found, of course, the best thing is to get involved in as a participant observer in things that are going on. So in actual fact, what you're hearing is people speaking to one another rather than speaking to you.
Well, it makes sense to pursue it that way. Well, where do you go to get people to talk around you rather than to you? Because when talking to you, they'll try to speak your language, right?
Of course. The best way is to go into any kind of social atmosphere. I kind of like atmosphere in bars, so I did a lot of my work in bars. Chat with people, and before long they would get to chatting with other of their friends who happened to be there, and I would just hang out on the periphery and throw in a word here and there or just listen.
So one end of it would be the conversation that we're having, standard English.
Pretty much.
What would be at the other end?
Well, at the other end, again, would be something that would be, again, almost incomprehensible. Like if you say, oh, I'm talking to this old woman who'd never even been to school. She was a woman about 70 or 80 in the rice-growing village in Guyana. And she said to me, "Not punished in God, not punish a bee." And "na punish the government, a punish a bee." And what that means is, isn't the government making us suffer?
So over the years of study, you've come up with several different theories of where this came from, and you've had to change your mind as mm-hmm. you've gone along. You've developed a theory which has encountered some controversy, I gather. The language bioprogram theory.
Yep, that's correct.
Will you tell us about that?
Basically, the intuition I had about that arose when I was looking at the verbal system in Guyana and comparing it with that in Hawaii, the way they use tense and aspect and things like that. This is remarkably similar, not just in those two Creoles, but in a majority of Creoles. In some cases, it's totally identical. In others, you get slight minor variations, but still the same basic system. And at first, I thought this obviously doesn't come from English. Where could it come from? The obvious source is, well, it must be one of what they call the substratum languages, which are the languages that were spoken by the parents of the original speakers, the slaves who eventually produced these languages. So I went looking for what I thought would be the source, and then something suddenly occurred to me. Supposing I found a language that had exactly the same system, how could that language, because it wasn't a common system outside of Creoles, how could that language possibly have fertilized all these other different Creoles in different parts of the world? And it seemed to me this was an impossibility.
So you stopped looking for a root language and started looking for a way in which the Creole language formed in each new location?
Yeah, and formed in the same way. And the only way I could think of was from what Chomsky's called universal grammar, that the human species has some kind, we don't understand yet how, some kind of inbuilt mechanism for producing language. And that it was this mechanism which, when it didn't get sufficient input, or when the input was kind of confused, as it was in the case of a pigeon, children would simply go ahead and spoke whatever came naturally, and that would be, of course, the same, not entirely, of course, but more or less the same in every situation.
So let me just make sure that I understand. You have English on one hand being spoken by the masters in these situations. You have people speaking a variety of language who are in the community that will develop the Creole language.
Absolutely.
In order to communicate between the two, they have to come up with the pigeon.
Uh-huh.
The children...
Well, you know, it's more to talk to each other. The pigeon is, of course, an emergency language. This is all the masters can use in giving their orders and so forth. But the main raison d'etre for a pigeon is for people of different languages to talk to one another, the slaves or indentured laborers or whatever, to be able to communicate with each other, because it's other slaves or indentured laborers are the ones that they're going to be in contact with most. Their contacts with the masters are going to be quite limited.
Did you come up with this theory on your own?
Yeah. Nobody had ever suggested it, and when I first put it out, nobody liked it either. It was kind of very unexpected. People hadn't ever thought about that before, and naturally, whenever you produce anything that's too new or too different, you tend to get negative reactions.
Is there still any controversy about it, or is it pretty widely accepted now?
It's very interesting. It's very widely accepted outside of Creole scholars, but there's still a lot of Creole scholars who are still skeptical, and I find that kind of bizarre, because to my mind, the evidence is absolutely overwhelming.
How do you respond to your critics? Do you just say, well, just because it doesn't fit with what you thought before? I suppose that doesn't go over very well, does it?
No, I don't say that. I just bring practical examples of critical cases where it's impossible to give any explanation other than mine.
Well, assuming that your theory is correct, and certainly it is widespread, what do you think that it tells us about the way we learn languages in general?
Yeah, that's maybe the most fascinating part, because I've always been suspicious of this kind of little linguist model in which a child is supposed to, listen to the language and induce grammatical rules and all that kind of thing. I think simply what happens is this, in normal acquisition, the children learn words. And that's all they actually learn. They don't actually learn constructions at all, because once they have words, they can start putting them together with this mechanism. Again, this is something that we still don't understand. We're nowhere near understanding it. We're a little nearer than we were when I got into this, but there's a long way to go.
So listening to Creole, you're hearing some of the same construction, the same process that you hear in general language learning.
Yeah, very often.
Which means that your title's all wrong. These are not bastard tongues, are they?
Not at all. The reason I chose that, well, first of all, it's a great title, I think. Memorable, anyway. And the other thing was that this is how they've been regarded. I say at some point, I think early on in the book, I say that, you know, they were despised by everybody and nobody knew who their real parents were. So what else could you call them? This is the classic definition of a bastard. But no, of course they're not. On the contrary, they represent our common source, what makes us human. Because if we didn't have this power to create language, we would be a very different species and probably still running around on the savannas.
Derek Bickerton is the author of Bastard Tongues. A trailblazing linguist finds clues to our common humanity in the world's lowliest languages.